The research generally says that poor people use money on a range of beneficial things, and importantly things that might be hard for an outside expert like us to predict. It seemed like there was an opportunity that other organizations weren't taking advantage of. So there were no charities at the time that were offering us the opportunity to send money directly to poor households.
If you just explain the mechanics of it then, how does it actually work in practice?
What we have to do in order to get money into the hands of very poor people is very simple. We have to do two things. We have to locate them, and then we have to send money to them via M-Pesa. So to locate poor households, we send staff into a village and we locate people who live in mud huts. That's currently our targeting criterion. So people who have a metal roof or who have stone walls would be ineligible. People who have mud walls and a thatched roof would be eligible. And we recruit them, we enroll them, we give them a SIM card, which costs about 50 cents, and ask them to register this SIM card for M-Pesa. And once they've done that, that means that we can send money to them on their mobile phone, or the mobile phone of a family member or a friend if they don't own one themselves.
And what is M-Pesa?
So M-Pesa is a sort of Kenyan slang for mobile money. And the way the system works is like a banking service, like a money transfer service. I would go to an M-Pesa agent, I would give him some money. This would create M-Pesa float, mobile money in my account. And then I would instruct the system to send that money to you. And you'd get a text message saying that Paul has just sent you $50. And you would then go to your local M-Pesa agent. That would typically be a shopkeeper in the nearest town or village. And you'd go to him, show him the text message. He would process the transaction, and then you would cash out the $50 that I just sent you.
Okay, let's turn to you, Michael Jennings. What do you make of this initiative?
It's not new in itself. Perhaps the combination is doing something differently. And Paul's right that cash transfers do seem to be beneficial in allowing people to decide for themselves their priorities. There is pretty good evidence that the poor are quite good at making choices, so they do tend to invest in education, health, in savings.
The poverty indicators that Paul is talking about, is there a problem with them?
It's an interesting way of judging who is poor. I mean, there's a certain logic to it, I can see. I think one of the problems is that it potentially misses out groups. Not everyone who might be considered the poorest of the poor will necessarily live in a house that is obviously poor. I think when we're trying to look for who the poorest of the poor is, it's incredibly complicated. And it's also very difficult for communities themselves to find agreement on what these areas are. I mean, I don't know too much about the model of Give Directly, but just from what I've read of it, clearly it relies on having an agent who can pass on the money through the M-Pesa system. Not all areas are going to be covered. Most in Kenya are, but there are some areas that won't be. So the very poorest of the poor, the most marginalised, the most vulnerable, I think are actually quite likely not to be picked up by this system.
Let me bring in Duncan Green at this point. Duncan, Paul talked about two different types of systems, giving directly or giving through an organisation such as yours. I mean, it's not a direct opposition, is it? You do actually at Oxfam, you do some direct giving.
Yeah, no, I've talked to Paul about this in the past. So we've done a number of cash transfer schemes, some of them really interesting, giving $500 to 500 poor families in Vietnam in a manner which sounds very similar to the way Give Directly does. And Oxfam found that people were using the money well and spending it on some interesting things which we couldn't have predicted.
So they're not a panacea?
Well, they're not the whole story. So, for example, what about communities? That often the way communities get out of poverty is by actually organising, say, farmers coming together, trying to find a better deal for their crops collectively, going talking to dealers. All that kind of work we do as an NGO doesn't really fit. So this is a kind of good solution to a particular set of problems, which is individuals who need a bit more money in the short term to get through.
One of the points that Paul made was that there are cost and transparency advantages of doing this direct kind of transfer. And I guess for a big organisation, that is an issue. People wanting to give to an organisation like Oxfam will be asking, well, where do the costs go? Are we really spending it on the people that need it most, or is a lot of it going into administration?
That's right, and that's a really healthy pressure, which has, if anything, grown over the years. And we have a lot of people spend a lot of time telling us how to cut costs. So I think we're now up to 83p in the pound, 83 cents in the dollar get spent on programme, but that doesn't all go into people's pockets. Some of that will be spent on campaigning for changes to laws, to policies. There's a whole range of different things you need to do to achieve development and to help partner organisations achieve development.
Paul, just to come back to you, we asked on our Facebook page on the BBC World Service what people thought about giving. Should it be directly? If you want to give, should you give via a bigger charity. Quite a few interesting comments. This from Eleanor Phil says, it's better to donate directly, but to give things like clothing, food or building materials, because money can be directed into areas that you may not want it to go towards. What do you say to that?
Well, I'm really glad you asked. I think to me that raises the sort of fundamental question about when we aim to help an individual, what exactly are we aiming to do? So the way we approach this at GiveDirectly is we try to provide people with as much information as possible about how the poor use money. And I think as Mike and Duncan have both said, the evidence on that is overwhelmingly very positive. But it is important to note that at the end of the day, our philosophy is that the goal of development is to help people live the lives they want to live. And if that means that for them a priority is having a metal roof instead of a thatched roof over their heads, we'd like to help them achieve that goal. I think overwhelmingly, people are really pleased to have that kind of flexibility to set their own priorities and end up being happy with the decisions they've made.
Well, let's ask the others about it. Duncan, you want to come in here?
Yeah, just one thing. I think there's a slight sort of misunderstanding here. So we don't say you can have anything you like as long as it's a cow. We go into communities with local staff and we actually do a needs assessment, find out what's preventing people from getting on, and then try and help them find solutions to that.
What does the evidence suggest about how people use money that's given to them?
Interesting example from Vietnam, where you can't always predict what people will use the money for. When we gave out these $500 chunks to a number of families, some of the older people bought nice coffins. And we had a big discussion about whether this was a proper use of Oxfam's money. And we decided it was. They were buying coffins because funerals are a big deal in many communities and they put an enormous strain on the family. And these older people wanted to go off well, but not cripple the family in the process. And is that a good use of NGO money or not? I think it is, but we certainly could never have predicted it. So one of the nice things is the unpredictability of this.
Michael Jennings, what about the recipient? Is there any evidence about how they like to have the money or the funds donated to them?
Well, I think recipients are looking for a whole range of things. Certainly for some areas, having cash is incredibly useful and incredibly important. There are projects which involve communities, smaller and larger, which can't really be done through cash. So interestingly, some research done in Bangladesh by a colleague of mine, Naila Kabir, looked at microcredit programs, which effectively just give cash, albeit in the form of a loan, as against organizations that try to give some kind of political education and greater awareness of how they could mobilise change. And the research showed that organisations that looked towards empowerment, sought to give people civic education to understand how they could engage in political process to get changed, also had better material progress than did microcredit organisations. So it isn't just about money. There's a whole range of issues that lead people into poverty and keep them there. Because of that, a whole host of inputs and interventions are needed to get people out. But I think there are real questions about how accountable NGOs are to the communities in which they work. They don't have a comeback for the NGO because it isn't based in the country. And some NGOs are better than others.